I prepared some sheets for people, but I didn't expect there would be so many people, so I apologise that there may not be quite enough. If people wouldn't mind looking over somebody's shoulder, that might be that might be the best thing to do. First of all, I want to just express my thanks to Rabbi Rabson and to the Torah Way and move on. Thank you all for coming today. I appreciate it. I'd like to speak this morning about a very interesting area in Halacha. We're not going to be able to cover the whole thing properly because it's a very in-depth area, but it's the issue of Gneivas Das and giving misleading advice. Title I put here on the sheet, Deceptive Practices, Halachic Attitudes to Honesty and Disclosure, is a rather grand title, but I think we're going to at least pick up some a framework for understanding how this moves forward, and then we can plug other practical implications into it. We've got about 27 minutes, and hopefully we'll be able to cover the material on the sheet. The first source here is the makor for stealing, which is poshet, loisig noivu, which is a poshet here in Vayikra Yud Tes, in Parshas Kedoshim. Most of the mitzvahs ben Aron Chaveru, agav, are in Parshas Kedoshim in Vayikra Yud Tes. Pretty much every single one of them is there. It's a very fertile ground for learning. You're so fast in the laning, but it's all there. Loisig noivu, loisig chachashu, loisig shakru, ishba amisot. So here you have the original makor of stealing. Now, of course, stealing in the Aseret HaDibros, Loisignoiv is talking about stealing people rather than stealing money. The Chazal learned that Rashi there from the context with their all chayvim misa, everybody who is murdering and adultery, etc. But this is the source of stealing money. However, we see very clearly from Sukkim, all over Tanakh, that there is a context of stealing which is not monetary at all. I brought you one example in number two here, which is a pasuk from Bereishis Lamed Aleph, which is when Yaakov runs away from Lavan. It says Vayignoiv Yaakov et leiv Lavan. He stole Lavan's leiv. Why? Lavan arami al beli higid loy kaya ki boi reyachu, because he didn't tell him he was running away. So gnevat haleiv is a concept that the Pesukim wants to sensitize us to. Now, of course, in Tanakh speak, if you like, the leiv is not here, the leiv is up here. The lave is constantly referred to as the seat of intellect, seat of thinking, not in the seat of emotion. That's perhaps a slightly different idea. But we see this idea that Yaakov stole Lavan's heart, he stole his mind, he tricked him, he deceived him in some way. Now, of course, it was entirely legitimate in the context of the relationship between Yaakov and Lavan. That's a whole different question, whether Yaakov was allowed to lie, wasn't allowed to lie, Esav, Lavan, etc., etc. That's a different shear. That's a shear on Emes and Sheker, which is something else we can talk about in Emes Hashem another time. But for now, we see here the Yignoves Lev Lavan. We also see this, by the way, by Avshalom. When Avshalom tricked the people over there in Malachim in Shmuel Beis into thinking that he was a big tzaddik, he also says the Yignov is lay farm. He stole the minds of the people. And Chazal pick up on this, and when it translates into Loshon Chazal, it turns from Gnevat HaLev into Gnevat Das. Have a look at number three. Number three is a Mechilta, where Chazal pick up on this, and they say a very interesting thing. Shiv'a Gnavim Heim. There are seven types of Gnavim. Now, obviously, as everyone is aware, there is a significant difference between Gneva and Gezela. The difference between Gneva and Gezela is that Gneva is, if you like, underhanded. Gneva is secret and in a cheating sort of way, whereas Gezela is open and brazen. It's quite clear that Gneva is definitely a more significant Aveira than Gezela. You can see this clearly from the punishments and the ownership the Torah gives, because in addition to being a property crime, Gneva is also turns you into a cheat. It's an Issa Bein Adam La'atzmo, if you like, not just Bein Adam La'chaveira. So Gneva versus Gezela, Gneva is definitely worst off. And here, of all the different kinds of Gnovim, Chazal says Shiva Gnovim Haim, there are seven types of Gnovim, Harishan Sheva Gnovim, Goinev Da'at Abriyah. Interesting. The worst of all Gnovim, the worst of the worst of the worst, and we're talking about a Doraita here, is someone who is Goinev Da'at Abriyah. Cheating. This is not just Bad Midas. This is Gneva. This is Mamash Gneva. And the example that the Chazal give here in the Mechilta is a very interesting one. Hamasayda Chaveru La'orchoi, someone who presses a guest to come to eat with them, but they have no intention of inviting them. We've all seen this. You know, someone who, oh, please come for Shabbos, and, you know, they only ever ask you at a time they know you can't come. Why? I just want to be, you know, they look, come across as the kind of person who wants to invite people for Shabbos, but really the whole thing is a sham.
The whole thing is a fraud. This is Gneiva on its most significant and deeply offensive level, according to this Mechilta. And we'll soon see the sugi here in Chulin as to how Chazal learned it out, but that's perhaps just a taste of how seriously Chazal take this. You'll see that the same example comes up in Chulin with extra ramifications. Okay, I apologize for those who don't have the notes, anyone who's listening doesn't have the notes either, but I'll tell you where all the sources are so that you'll be able to find them out. The next stage down is the Mishnah in Chulin. There's a Mishnah in Chulin in Tzadi Gimel. The Mishnah says as follows, in dealing with an interesting sugya. The sugya here it's dealing with is, are you allowed to sell non-kosher meat to non-Jewish people? Trade for meat to non-Jews. Is that mutter or is that osser? The shaila is, why should it be osser? What should be the problem with selling trade for meat to non-Jews? They're not being kosher. So we'll see there's a Mishnah Mefurish that says it's a problem. And the Gemara is trying to work out why exactly it's a problem, and it will come to an understanding of why. Source 4 here is the Mishnah in Chulin Tzadi Gimel. It says as follows: Shalech Adam Yerech La'ovid Kachovim. A person is allowed to send a leg of an animal to a non-Jew. When? Shegid Anosher B'Soichol. Even if the Gid Anosher is still attached to the leg of the animal. Why? Mitneishim Akoyim Nikah. Because it's obvious, it's clear to the non-Jew when he receives the leg of the animal that the meat is trade. And there won't be any kind of suggestion that the meat is really kosher. To which the Gemara picks up and says here a little bit later on in Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis, says Shleima in, clearly the deal from the Mishnah is if the piece of meat is whole, then it's mutter to send it to a non-Jew. However, Chatucha loy. But if it's chopped up, it's osser. Why? Why should it be osser to send chopped up meat to a non-Jew? To which the Gemara answers, Mishum de Tegoniv Leila Dase. Because you're tricking him. You make him think, the Jewish person sending him meat, the assumption is the meat is kosher. And if a non-Jew receives meat from a Jew and assumes it's kosher when in fact it's trade, that's a terrible thing. That's Gneivas Daas Midoraisas. Gneivas Daas. Why? Because there are non-Jews in this world who think kosher means clean or kosher. Especially in America, you get this phenomenon. I don't know so much in England this is the case. But in America, there's a very large kosher market for people who are completely non-Jewish. They think it's healthy. How anyone could think Kishka and Kugel is healthy, as we all know, really. But there are people in this world, maybe, I don't know, have a skula of some kind. Who knows what it is? But they think that the kosher means clean, and if you sell them meat, and they think it's kosher, and it's really trade, Gneivas Daas. It's trade descriptions. You have misled them into buying something which they didn't think they were buying. As we see, let's carry on. Da'amar Shmuel, Osra Liknoi Daas Abriyas Afiru Daas Ashal Oivet Tachonim. The Gemara says quite clearly, and there's no chokim on this, that it's also to mislead, it's also to do Geneva with a non-Jew. There is no Shaila. There is a Shaila as to whether Gezela is also with a non-Jew, as well as with a Jew. There's a whole debate about that. Near the Shulchan Aruch Pasuk, it's also as well with a non-Jew. But there is never a debate about Geneva. Geneva is also across the board, quite clearly, and the answer to that is part of the reason for that is Poshet. As we said before, Gneiva is not just a question of taking other people's money away. If it was just a question of taking other people's money away, okay, then we can debate. Jewish money, not Jewish money. Gneiva is a cruelty in the individual. Gneiva is you becoming a cheat. Therefore, it doesn't make any difference whose money you're taking. There's no debate about it. If you're becoming a ganef is a ganef is a ganef, because you've made yourself into a ganef. Therefore, the Gemara here says clearly, even if it's a non-Jew, there is no shaila that the Gneiva's doubt is absolutely awesome. What's that?
Chanifa.
Right. And so, well, Chanifa is, in the sense of making painting someone as a Rosh who is really painting them as a tzaddik. The whole.
No, it's a goyim thing, not a matzim. If you chanifa to a goy, you say you are good.
Right. There's definitely there are many things. Many Beit Al Mechaveros are only between Jews and Jews. Obviously, Beit Tzadik Tishpat Amisachon, the Hafta Leves Tamosa. These are Hashavat Aveda. These are, if you like, family mitzvahs between Jews and Jews. But here we're talking about Geneva, which is across the board. The Gemara continues. Tanya, Hayar Rabbi Meir Omer, Al Yisariv Adam Mechavero Lisoid Etzlo Yodeya Bosheino Soyed. This is the example we saw in the Mechilta, that a person shouldn't invite someone for a meal when they know they're not going to come. They shouldn't try and push presents onto people when they know that they're not going to accept them. This is the same idea. Now and then, the Gemara gives an interesting example, which Rashi, a very important Rashi on. He shouldn't open up a barrel of wine which is really sold to the shopkeeper down the road. We'll explain that in a minute. Ela intein hoidil, unless he explains that he's doing it for that reason. What is this case? This case is, in our case, in today's world, it will be crack open a bottle rather than a barrel. But the classic case is as follows. You come to my house for dinner, and I say, oh, Kosher gets from Golden Screen. We'll crack open a bottle of Chardonnay 2004, very good wine. For you, we'll crack open the bottle. And really, the whole thing is a ruse. Because really, I've got somebody, Kosher coming from somewhere else in a half an hour. I've got to open the bottle anyway. But you know something? Why not make you feel nice? I'll open the bottle for you as well. You never know the difference. What difference does it make? Says the Gemara, Gnevas Das. Often is alright. One of my Rebbeim had this Shiloh, very interesting. He went to someone's house. This happened here in the locality. I don't know any names, which is just as well. They offered him a whiskey. So he said, I'll take a little whiskey. I'm not such a big Feinschmecker in whiskeys, you know, whatever. So he opens the cupboard there, and he gets out his, you know, Glenmorangie 30-year-old Carter strength, whatever it is. And he starts pouring. He says, no, I don't waste that on me. So the guy looks at him and goes, no, somebody gave me this years ago. I just put Sainsbury's whiskey in it. You know, I just pour stuff in, and I serve it out to people. Why not? So and the guy said to the Rav, actually, you know something? I actually have a Shiloh about this. So I was thinking, well, yes, I'm sure you do have a Shiloh about this. What is Shiloh? I mean, the guy's over on his Suri Doraisa, Yom Yom. What is Shiloh? He says, do I have to do Tfilas Kalim on the bottle if I want to use it again? It's a nice Shiloh. It's a nice, very interesting Shiloh. It's a Kli, is it not a Kli? Is it Yiddish Kli? The point here is, he's missed the most fundamental Shiloh that he has. That he's so much pushing the body, he's going to Vata Bris. He's pretending that he's giving them whiskey, which he's clearly not giving them. And Rashi brings out the fundamental Nakuda here, the real point as to why this is Osir. I've underlined it, I'm putting it in bold. Rashi says here, Mipnei she'goinev libo lahasik lo tova chinam. He's trying to get a tova chinam. He makes the other guy think that he owes them a favor. And he doesn't. And it's all a ruse. I make you think that you owe me a favor because I've done something for you, and it's not true. Classic example, if you ask someone asks me to give them a lift, a ride in the car, and I'm sitting in Bayit Hagan where I teach, and some girl comes out and says, will you take me to Haranoff? And I say, oh, for you, Haranoff, no problem. And I'm going there anyway. Awesome. Because she thinks, oh, Rabbi Mani, take people to Haranoff, what a nice man. And it's all really nonsense. I'm not a nice man, I'm going there anyway. So I have to, maybe I'm a nice man, I have to ask my wife that. I don't know, I'm biased. So she says, you have to tell them. You have to inform them that, look, I'm going anyway, but I'd be delighted to tell you. Now, the Gemara refines this and introduces some slightly different nuances. V'loi yoma loi soich shemim mipachareikam. Don't try and offer them oil. Oil was a very fine commodity from a bottle that was really empty. The indish vil kvoidoi muta. So it's an interesting thing. If it's for their cover, then it's muta. There's no geneva das if your intention, if your kavana in trying to do this is to be mechabed them. This comes off the Rashi that we saw really. That if Rashi says that the whole point is you're trying to get something for nothing. If you're not trying to get something for nothing, if you're just trying to give them covered, then or stop upsetting them or refrain from upsetting them in some way, then that's not part of this issa. I said a test on this when I give this out in class in Yerushalayim. So one of the questions I said on the test was as follows. So some girl, she comes out, she has some friends around for dinner, and she brings out a chocolate cake for dessert. Okay? Brings it out to the table. So one of the other girls starts screaming and shouting, oh, I can't believe it, you remember my birthday, you're such a wonderful friend. I can't believe it, I didn't know you knew my birthday. Oh, and you have no idea. No idea it was her birthday. What are you meant to do exactly? Of course, happy birthday, how could I forget, what do you think I am? Or you might say, well, actually, I have no idea about your birthday, had I known, I would have baked you a cake, as the song goes, whatever. But what are you meant to say? So it depends on your kavanah. If you're just trying to, you don't have to upset people, to be mechaved people in a certain way, is part of the acceptable boundaries of Geneva's Das, as opposed to tricking them. We'll see soon that there is a limit. To what degree are we responsible for other people jumping to unreasonable conclusions? This is very interesting we'll see there's a Mufurish Gemara on this in a minute. To what extent do we assume that people take you seriously? This is very relevant in advertising, of course. If you're selling, let's say, trainers, if you're selling Nike trainers that are worth $100, £100, retranslates to pounds now, they're worth £100, and you're selling them for £50 and they're fakes, yeah, and they say Nike on them and they're fakes, so that's your neighbor's dash. You're selling people things, they think, if you're selling Nike trainers for £2.50, and they retail for £100. Is that Geneva's Das? Does anyone in their right mind think that's true? Or is it just, obviously false? Similarly, with this girl and the chocolate cake, we'll see in a minute, is it reasonable of this girl to jump to the conclusion that all of a sudden everyone's buying her birthday cake? We'll see the Gemara talks about that in just 1 minute. Fine. And finally, the Gemara ends here in number 5 towards the end, and it says the last case, which is the case of advertising and sales. Tan Rabbanan lo yimchor adam lechaveru sandal shel meisa. You can't sell somebody a shoe which is made of a dead animal, an animal that just keeled over and died one day, okay? Bichlal shel chaya shchuta, on the basis that it was an animal which was shechted properly. And people were very meticulous to what they put on their feet. You didn't just want any old leather shoe on your feet from some animal that just fell over from some disease. You wanted to know it was a healthy animal, it was a chaya shchuta, it was shechted properly. Mitnei beit dvarim, two reasons why. Aleph mitnei shemetahu, it's because you're, it, again, it's geneva style. Selling products which are advertised as being one thing when in fact they are something inferior to that, it's clearly geneva style. The echad, and also mitnei hasakana, because also you don't know what this animal died of, and who knows whether there's any disease that a person might catch. And the last example the Gemara gives is lo yishaga adam lechaveru chavya shal yayin v'shem etzaf al piya. You can't sell someone a barrel of wine which has got oil on the top, because they buy it, they think it's a barrel of oil, they think they're getting a great deal, £50 for a barrel of oil, fantastic, and in fact oil is just on the top, everything else is wine. This is the classic case, you go to the fruit market and all the apples and pears on the top look fantastic, and you ask for a pound of fruit and then it's all coming from underneath the counter, and that's the classic example. And the Gemara ends with a salutary tale. Umaisa be'echot, and there's a story of one fellow. Shishigel chaveru chabes shel yayin. He sent a barrel of wine to his friend, sold it. The shemen tafopi, and there was oil on the top. The halak mazimin alei orachin, and he went and invited guests because he thought he had a whole barrel of wine. The nichnasu oil. Sorry, he thought he had a whole barrel of oil, and he was prepared to invite all the guests. The nichnasu, and they all came in. Umata shehi shel yayin, and he found actually the whole thing was a fraud. It was a fake. He'd been deceived. The Chonafit Atzma Nebuch, he killed himself, he was beside himself with embarrassment. It's okay, a bit of an extreme case, he was obviously an unstable character. But the point here is that the Gemara is stressing that this is really Geneva. Now, in that case, it may have been Geneva's moment as well. It depends on how much he sold it for. Obviously, if a barrel of wine is worth $50 or £50, and he sold the barrel of wine with the oil on top for £50, then he's not actually stealing any money, because he's bought what he gets what he paid for. What he is stealing is the das of what he thought it really was. Fine, fairly straightforward. But the Gemara then wants to take it to a level further. The Gemara now wants to ask basically the following question: how much are we responsible for other people jumping to conclusions? This is a question I kind of raised before, and this is now the Gemara that wants to deal with this. Heichem achrizen. Look at number 6. This is the Gemara in Chulin in Sadi Dalad Amud Bet. Sorry, Heichem achrizen. What do we have to say? How do we announce that this meat is on sale for non-Jews? Let me remind you of the case. The case is a Jewish butcher who has to have tray for meat, which he wants to sell. I mean, the Jews aren't going to buy it. He wants to sell off this tray for meat to non-Jews. So what's he going to say? How's he going to announce it in his shop window? Yeah? Tray for meat on sale. How's he going to do it? Bit of a strange case. What does he say? Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef says as follows. Nafal Bishra Lebnei Chayla. The meat is available for non-Jews. The chayalim, the non-Jewish soldiers that pass through town from time to time, he should say on the shop, meat here available for non-Jews. Says the Gemara, hang on, is that enough? They'll think it's kosher meat. V'leimer nofel treif v'ser l'bnei chayla. He should put treif meat available for non-Jews. Okay, not just meat, because he'll assume that the meat is kosher, and you can't sell kosher meat to a non-Jew, to trade the meat to a non-Jew, rather thinking that many things is kosher. So the Gemara says, lo zavli, well, you want to put trade meat on sale? No one's going to buy it. They don't want your second-rate meat, leftovers. No one's going to buy it if you put it to trade. To which the Gemara says, akamatalu, but if you don't put it to trade, you're tricking them. So what are you going to put? If you put trade meat, then no one's going to buy it. If you put meat on sale for non-Jews, then you're tricking them. Says the Gemara, no. You can just put meat on sale for non-Jews. Why? Inu kinematai nafshayu. And this is a very important principle. They are only fooling themselves. They are only tricking themselves. Why? So this is the machlokas Rashi Tosfos, exactly why that is. But they're only tricking themselves. Why would a non-Jew think that a Jew was selling meat for non-Jews? Come on. He's got a special range in special kosher meat for non-Jews? No. Obviously, if a Jewish butcher is selling meat and he puts on the shop non-Jews only, what do you think the meat is? So you don't have to spell it out, trace meat, really trace meat. No, Jews don't buy it. You don't have to spell it out. Now, the Gemara then gives a rather interesting, a slightly amusing case that demonstrates this very nicely. Ki hada mar zutra breda Rav Nachman. Just like the case of mar zutra, have a ka'azil misichra lebei mechuzah. He was going from Sichra to Bei Mechuzah. He was going from town A to town B. For Rava, the Rav Safra, have a Ka'asu and a Sichra, and Rava and Rav Safra were coming in the opposite direction. So you have Rabbi A, Marzutra, going towards the town, and Rava and Rav Safra coming away from the town. Pagwa Hadadi, of course, they met in the middle. What happened? I'm sure you've all read this before. Who Savar? He thought, La'ate Hukatu. They were the reception committee. You know, Choshev and Rav coming to town, they sent out Rav and Rav Safra to be mekabel upon him, to receive him and to bring him in pomp and circumstance. Amar lehu, he said to them, oh, really, you shouldn't have. Amar lehu, lamalu rebanan the teruach, the article the high, you really shouldn't have done all this, really it wasn't necessary. To which Rav Safra responded, Amar le Rav Safra, Anan lai havi adin in tafamar, really we didn't. We didn't know you were coming, we had no idea you were coming. We didn't come to meet you at all. We just found me walking. If we had have known, of course we would. We would have come to meet you. But don't think for one minute that we came to meet you, because we didn't. Robert turned around to him and said, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you saying that for? Amale Rava. Robert said to him, my time I honestly happy. Why did you say that to him? You've upset the guy. Why did you have to upset him? Let him think that we're coming to meet him. What harm does it do if he thinks that we're the reception committee? This way, the guy's going to town thinking no one came to meet him. Amalei, so he responded to him. Rava said to him, why did you have to say that? Rav Safra responded to him. Amalei said to him, we would have deceived him. What, we're going to let him think that we came to meet him and we didn't come to meet him? To which Rava responds, no. Ihu de kamatayin nashek. He is only fooling himself. Is it reasonable to expect when you meet somebody in the street, you're walking down the street and then you're here visiting from Eretz Israel and you see three guys walking down the street and you start screaming and shouting, oh, I can't believe you came to meet me. Why should they have come to meet you? Okay, you're hush of a guy, but you're welcome to come to meet you. Says, no, he was only fooling himself. And this seems to be the way that we go on this. There's an interesting machloikis between Rashi and Tosis. The Rashi here in number 7, I haven't got time for the whole of Rashi, but Rashi clearly understands that he was only fooling himself because we didn't say anything. If you kept quiet, then they were only fooling themselves. Similarly, in the case of the meat, we never said that the meat was kosher. So if they think it's kosher, then, you know, that's their problem. We never said, in the case of the wine and cracking open the bottle, Rashi understands that we never said that the wine is for you. I'm doing this for you. I just cracked open the bottle. He jumped to his own conclusion. In the case of Rav and Rav Safra, we never said that we were coming to meet him. So according to Rashi, then the issue is, did I mislead you verbally, or did I not mislead you verbally? According to Tosfos, and this is how I understand that the halacha is paskin, it goes further than that. Look at number 8 in Tosfos. So it seems, says Tosfos, Gehotam Bastam, the case over there with Stam, you never said anything actually. You never actually verbally misled anybody. But it's still Osa. Mishum She'ein Lo'ireach La'asuki Daisi D'Mukhuras Lechendi. Because the key here is this. In the case of the wine, is it reasonable for your guest to assume, even if you never said anything, is it reasonable for your guest to assume that you were only doing this because you're opening the wine because you were using it later for something? If you come to my house for dinner and I crack open an expensive bottle of wine, it's reasonable for you to assume that I'm doing it for you, even if I never said anything. If it's reasonable for the guest to assume that and it's not true, then I'm over on Geneva's staff. Aval Hocha, in the case of the Jews and the butcher and the non-Jews, Aval Hocha, they should have understood the trace of heat. It's reasonable for a non-Jew to expect that meat coming from a Jewish shop on sale for non-Jews is clearly traced. And similarly, that he should have understood that they weren't coming to meet him. So it seems that the test is a reasonableness test. How you exactly assess the reasonableness test is a very interesting question. You know, Lahabdil, Lord Denning always used to talk about the man on the Clapham omnibus. Okay? So, you know, that doesn't translate usually very well to American yeshiva guys. But anyway, you guys know what I'm talking about. You've all been on the Clapham Omnibus at one point or another. If you haven't, I'm sure you will. But the point here is, how do you exactly define the question of reasonableness? That's an interesting question that we need Tzorich Iyun, we need to go into it further, etc. Let's take it to its final stage and flip over the page, and you'll see that look at number 11 for a second. Number 11 gets into the issue of how you describe things when you're selling them. Look at number 12, sorry. Also, this is from the Rambam in Hilchas Mechira in Yudches Halacha Aleph. Also, the Ramos is Bnei Adam, the Mekach Omemka. A person is not allowed to trick another person when it comes to sales, Mekach Omemka, or to cheat them in any way. Echad Oyvik Kochavim, Echad Yisrael, Shavim Badavazah. It doesn't matter whether they're Jewish or whether they're non-Jewish. This absolutely makes no difference. If you are actively tricking them and deceiving them into buying something that they is flawed, that is completely offset. If you know that there is a defect in what you're selling, you have to inform the lokeach. We do not have a concept of caveat emptor in the same sense that they have in English civil law. Even if you're not even in sales, even if you're selling something, but it's just simply dvorim, like the bottle of wine and words alone, there's still a very strong concept of gnevas das. This issue of sales, let me end with two examples. This is a big subject, and I'm not certainly passing anything in this forum. But it's definitely something to be aware of for Shilas. I was selling my second-hand car many years ago here in London. And, you know, second-hand cars are second-hand cars. This squeaked and that didn't work and this broke and that was cracked, etc. I asked one of the local dayanim, to what extent do I need to reveal the things that are wrong with this car to the person who's buying it? And he said, poshut, he said, if you're selling it to a private individual, then you have to tell them, you have to make a list. You should know that the brakes don't work like this and the accelerator sticks like this and the brake, etc., because otherwise it's going to have a fact. If you're selling it to a dealership, then their expertise is to work these things out for themselves. And you say, look, it's a second-hand car. You take it, you test drive it. If you're happy with it, you're happy with it. And I don't need to get into details, fine details with them. And that's very often because again, what is reasonable for people to assume? A dealership, it's very much more reasonable for them to have an understanding of the kind of things that go wrong. Let me end in the last 2 minutes that we've got with a very interesting mitzvah. I heard from Rav Israel Tauber, who many of you will have heard on many occasions, I'm sure. He said a very interesting thing. There was a fellow in America who was a balabos, and he went to a lunchtime shiurim, and he went to a shiur on Geneva staff. He was a property developer, property dealer. And the Rav said, this kind of shiur, if there's a mum, if there's a defect in the property, we don't say caveat emptor. We don't just allow, because in English law, I'm sure you're aware, I'm sure it's the same in America as well, that the vendor is not required to reveal defects unless they're latent. Anything which is a patent defect, they have to ask the question. They have to ask you. If they don't ask you, and they never raise the question, then you're not obliged to tell them. So this case, this Rav gave a shiur, and the guy came up to me and said, I've got a problem here. I've got a problem. Why? Because I've got this building. I bought it years ago, and it's a terrible thing. There's a crack in the basement. Every time it rains, it floods. And I've tried to get rid of this building for years and years and years, and nobody will buy it, because every time I try to sell it, somebody always asks the question, is there any defects in the basement? And I always have to answer, yes, there's a crack, and everyone pulls out and says, she says, at last, finally, somebody exchanged contracts, and they never asked the question, and I never told them, and they're going to do the sale. Are you telling me, he said to the rabbi, this guy was becoming frum, and it was a big, big issue for him, are you telling me that I have to tell them that there's a crack in the basement? So the Rav says, you know something? I think you do. I think you do have to tell them. He says, they're going. It doesn't matter. I think you have to tell them. He says, you have to. You can decide the right time to tell them, whichever is right for you, but you do have to tell them. Anyway, so no matter what happened, they came to the completion meeting, and they were all sitting there around the table, just big, you know, big mahogany tables with all the lawyers and the accountants and the actuaries and everybody sitting there, all signing papers and exchanging them. And just before they completed, this balabas, the property developer, he wrote a memorandum, and he said, I'd like to hand this to the other side. So they got this, they opened it up, and it says, I wish to inform you that there is a crack in the basement, and it floods every time it rains, and I do not wish you to buy the property without knowledge of this defect. So no one's ever done that in a completion meeting before. So he said, what's going on? So the guy went off with his lawyers. He came back 5 minutes later and said, what's this? What are you telling me this for? He said, look, it's like this. I'm an Orthodox Jew. Okay? I live my life according to Jewish law, and my rabbis told me that I have to reveal this, so I'm revealing it to you. So I went away, 5 more minutes, came back, and they said, why didn't you tell us this before we exchanged? So he said, well, it's a bit strange, you might find this a bit funny, but I didn't know this halacha before we exchanged. I've just learnt it in the last few days, and you know, now I'm telling you now. So the guy went away again. He came back 10 minutes, this is how well the Talmud said it. He came back 10 minutes later and he said, you Jews, I know what you're trying to do. You've got a better offer for the building. You're trying to get out of the contract. He says, I'm not going to let you get away with it. So he said, I'm going to complete on this deal, and he did, and he signed up the deal. Now look, you know, I can't give you a haftacha that's going to happen every time you reveal a defect, but certainly in the Hashem, by being more aware and more sensitive to these issues of Geneva, then we'll certainly come to a deeper level of Ben Adel Chavero and more of a machshava in these issues. Thank you very much.